I'm not sure if the chairs of the entities are here, the CEOs as well. Morning to everybody. We are continuing with, oh, Prof, morning, I see your face. Morning, Prof. We are just proceeding with the process of budget that we have started last week with the department.
Recording in progress.
We are doing the two entities today, Umalusi and Faith. Can I request Llewellyn to do a roll call for us?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have Chairperson Binko Gigaba. I have Honorable Aduens, Honorable Siwela, Honorable Letsie. I have Honorable Mashabela, Honorable Dr. Tembe Kwayo, and Honorable Nobo. I have two apologies. One is for Honorable van der Walt, and one apology for Honorable Fukert's chair, and then from the minister, her office indicate that she has a PCC meeting this morning, so she won't be able to join us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Brown, I'm present.
I think I did say Honorable Mashabela and Honorable Dr. Tembe Kwayo.
don't do that mistake, Mr. Brown. The fighter will fight you. So that is the roll call of who and who is not in the meeting. Can you then fly to the agenda for us? We have on our agenda, like we have said, the presentation of both the entities, Umalusi and SACE, and then we are going to consider and adopt the minutes of the previous meeting. Okay, there is also the consideration. No, there is the minutes and reports. Can I see hands to adopt the agenda? That's it.
Chairperson, I wish to take this opportunity to move that this agenda be adopted as it is for our meeting today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Siyabonga nobhala omkhulu. Asisakuboni COVID yasimosha phela.
Chairperson, fine.
We understand.
I thought it's tomorrow that was going to complain.
No, we understand.
Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. And no problem, Kulu. I'm still complaining. Good morning to the department, the ministry, and colleagues from the two entities. I second the adoption of the minutes as it is. Thank you very much.
Now we are going to hand over to the DM to give us a political overview. But before that, I think it's important that you congratulate our WIP. She was graduating the past weekend. Our WIP is the WIP of the Portfolio Committee as well. So, Honorable Adwans, she was graduating last weekend. It's good that we are moving, we are making education fashionable. Congratulations, WIP, once more. DM? You can take over.
Congratulations to her. Honorable Adun. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. And my audible, because I've been kicked on my gadget. So
So no, I'm connected with another one. Yes. Thank you. Let me also, yes, greet you, Chair, greet all members that are present today. Greet the chairperson of Umalusi, Prof. Volmik, and the entire Umalusi team, the SAIS team led by the CEO, and basic education. I can see that the DG was still struggling to connect. I don't know if he has connected yet, but so too, DDGs, the CFO and DDG Padiache in the meeting leading the entire team of basic education. We also want to join you in congratulating Honorable Adjons. Indeed, we become so proud as the sector education if members are participating and leading by example. We really appreciate and congratulate Honorable Adjons. Chair, also to join you, I was afraid to ask the whereabouts of Honorable Ndlovu, because sometimes of late when you ask, they say, hey, didn't you hear? But I'm happy that he is in the meeting today. And Honorable Ndlovu, special greetings to you. We missed you for quite some time. Chair, we are here today to present on the two entities, that is SAIS and Umalusi. They are APPs as well as the budget. So we want to thank you for always guiding the department and its entities for us to do service delivery to the people of South Africa. We really appreciate it. As it was indicated, Minister has attended the PCC meeting, and we are here as a team, full force, ready to hear your guidance, ready to take questions, and also clarify ourselves. But we are looking forward more to guidance from the members. So I don't want to take permission from you today, Chair, but let me return the reins back to you to advise our team, Umalusi and SAIS, on the presentation and which one to start. How many minutes are allocated per entity? Thank you very much, Chair. Back to you.
DM, Siyabonga, DM. DG, are you in the meeting? No.
Not yet. Yes, because he's okay. Somewhere, in the Bundus.
He's always in the Bundus. Anyway, Prof. Volmik, can we allow you to do some comments?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee. Also, the DG and delegation of the DBE and the delegation from SAIS. It is my pleasure to greet you all and to lead the Umalusi delegation on behalf of the Umalusi Council to present the organization's 2022-23 annual performance plan, and as well as the budget. And we do that with great respect to the members of the Portfolio Committee. But before I continue, please allow me to start by introducing the delegation from Umalusi. We have with us this morning Dr. Mafura Kumetsi, the CEO of Umalusi, Mr. Hendrik van der Walt, the Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Zodwa Modimekwani, Executive Manager, Quality Assurance and Monitoring. And then we have Dr. Eva Suji, who is Acting Executive Manager, Qualifications and Research, in place of Mr. Emmanuel Sibanda, who's on leave. Usually, Dr. Suji is Senior Manager of qualifications, curriculum and certification. Then we also have Ms. Stella Mosimeghe, Senior Manager Strategy and Governance. And finally, Dr. Lucky Tuaniani, Senior Manager Public Relations and Communications. Honorable members, we meet at the time as the term of the current Umalusi Council is about to come to an end in the month of June this year. So at the outset, I wish to express my deepest gratitude to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education for the manner it had been performing its oversight role with respect to Umalusi by keeping us accountable and by calling us to regular scheduled meetings to report on the work of the Council. This support and guidance that Umalusi have received from the Portfolio Committee helped us as an organization to remain respected in the region and internationally as far as quality assurance of basic education is concerned. I'm confident that the incoming council will enjoy the same level of support and guidance from the esteemed members of this portfolio committee. That said, I have no doubt that the excellent work of Umalusi will continue to flourish under the guidance of the new council. So on behalf of the council, I also wish to thank the minister and deputy minister for the confidence and honor bestowed upon us to perform an oversight function on an organization that quality assures basic education in this country. Notably, Umalusi also celebrates its 20th anniversary this year. So 2022 is a year of celebration. Celebration of Umalusi's 20th anniversary will focus on the organization's numerous achievements in the past 20 years. One of the highlights of Umalusi's illustrious history, if I may say so, as a quality council for general and further education and training is the achievement of clean audits for the past two consecutive years. I am delighted to report to the honorable members that the achievement of clean audits happened during the tenure of the outgoing council, which I had the privilege and pleasure of leading. Today, we present to you the annual performance plan and budget, which was developed for the new financial year 2022-2023. The plan and budget are presented with the full realization that there are numerous societal, economic, and environmental factors that influence Umalusi's operations directly and indirectly. So as a result, Council is committed to oversee policy implementation as expressed in the plan and supporting the entity towards the attainment and of its targets within limitations of the financial resources. And so finally, as far as the details of the plan and the budget are concerned, I will now hand over to the CEO, Dr. Rakumetsi, and his team to take the honorable members through the presentation. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Professor Volming. Stella is going to share the presentation. Stella, can you do presentation mode, please?
Yes, Doc.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, Dr. Volming also, Honorable colleagues from Umalusi SAIS and the Department of Basic Education. My congratulations also to Honorable Adunz. I want to add my voice and say lifelong learning is the way to go. Chairperson, we thank you and the committee for the opportunity of presenting our annual performance plan and budget presentation to the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. Stella, you're still doing that thing that it was doing earlier, of having two slides, please. Can you just have one slide, not two for the presenters? Otherwise, you better go to non-slide mode.
Can I assist quickly?
Just take note, you've got 30 minutes, right?
Yes. Can they go to display settings there?
Display settings. Stella, can you follow?
The one in the middle?
The one in the middle? On top there?
Yes. No, in the middle this side. Yeah. Next row.
On your right?
Display settings? No, display settings, not that one. That is a show taskbar. Go to display settings on your right. No, not far from where you were. Can you go to display settings, or it does not show display settings on your side?
Okay. Now, maybe we should leave it. Stella, can you go back to where you were? Because it's very untidy the way it is now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lucia. I want to proceed. We are presenting on the annual performance plan and budget presentation to the Portfolio Committee, and we appreciate the opportunity. The presentation is going to focus on the mandate, the strategic focus, measuring performance and budget 2021-2022 to 2023-2024, and then we'll do the concluding remarks. Chairperson, I'm going to be sharing the presentation with Mr. Lamsimichi and the CFO, and then I'll take over to close. First of all, we derive our mandate from the Constitution. Chapter 2 says everyone has a right to education. Next slide, please. And then the NQF also gives us the mandate with the establishment of Umalusi's Quality Council. And then we've got another piece of legislation, which is the Founding Act of Umalusi, the Jalfetwa Act, which assigns Umalusi responsibility for quality assurance of general and further education and training. We have developed numerous institutional policies. I'll quickly go through them. It is the policy for general and further education and training, qualification staff framework. It is the guidelines on strategy and priorities for the NQF 2011-2012 by the Minister of Higher Education and Training. It is the national policies governing existing qualifications, including the assessment that are currently certified by Umalusi. I'm on slide 5, Stella. Standard and quality assurance of the general and further education and training qualification staff framework. And then policy documents and guidelines pertaining to the National Senior Certificate as amended, General Education and Training Certificate, NCV, NATED programs, and the National Curriculum Statement, any other qualification on the GFED QSF as applicable. Council policies and directives on the conduct, administration, and management of assessment for qualifications on the GFED QSF. Chairperson, also the regulation pertaining to qualifications on the GFED QSF developed by the Department of Basic Education and gathered by the Minister on assessment certification, including those promulgated by provincial legislatures, and policy framework that applies to all technical and vocational education and training colleges declared or established by the Minister under the Continuing Education and Training Act, number 16 of 2006. Policy and criteria for the development, registration, publication of qualifications on our SAR framework, the policy on the reissue of national senior certificates, and the recognition of prior learning policy. We also followed the Treasury regulations or any other related legislation appropriate to the various education and training sectors. It is ABET, it is FET colleges, it is schools under SASA. We follow the SASA as well. Now, on the role of UMALUSI, UMALUSI is the quality council responsible for qualifications registered on the SAR framework on the national qualification framework as well. The council ensures that the providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications and learning programs, and that they do so to the expected standards of quality. Very important. We have strategic priorities, and I'm going to briefly talk to the strategic priorities next slide. We focus on the reviewing of the quality assurance approach to accommodate new qualifications and improve the status quo, reviewing, evaluating, and appraising qualifications submitted for registration on our SAR framework, providing input to the founding act to accommodate new qualifications and desired extensions to the mandate for quality assurance. We intensify research on educational developments linked to the SAR framework to innovate and to advise the appropriate ministers of education on any issue relevant to their portfolios in relation to our SAR framework. We intensify advocacy to communicate to the South African public accurate and relevant messages on issues related to qualifications on our SAR framework. We do this on a continuous basis. In addition, the organization introduced blended models of moderation, that is on-site moderation, off-site moderation, and online moderation because of the pandemic. Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Lamsimehi to do part B of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, our Honorable Deputy Minister, good morning to you all and colleagues from the Department of Basic Education and from SAICE. I'm going to be taking you through Part B and C of the UMALUSI APP. Under Part B, we start with the performance environment, and we reflected in the APP, we reflected on the negative impact that COVID-19 had on our processes, on verification, on certification, on quality assurance of assessment, and also on advocacy and research activities. We also want to inform the portfolio committee that our work depends on the policy environment. If based on research, based on other activities happening in the sector, we as UMALUSI keep on developing policies as just elaborated by the CEO to remain relevant and competitive. In terms of quality assurance approach, we are moving with the times. There is need for us to keep reviewing how we do things. And lately, as we move into the new financial year, we have an instrument for external moderation of question papers for the GTC qualification that we've just reviewed. In terms of communication with our stakeholders, we have increased our media platforms. We are using Wikipedia, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Continuing on the performance environment, in terms of qualifications, certification, and accreditation, our analysis of trends show that we have dropped in terms of certification numbers after the 2020 examinations, which you all know that were postponed in June, and then we had a very big, there was a very big examination at the end of the year and the delayed certification in 2021. Similarly, our verification numbers have also dropped due to the impact of COVID-19. Also, maybe another result is because of the amendment of the NQF Act, where other clients are verifying with SAQA. We have shown our trends in terms of quality assurance of assessment. The APP shows the number of trends on the moderation of question papers, the monitoring of the examination centers during writing, the monitoring of marking, and also verification of marks for various subjects. The APP reflects that in detail on pages 18 to 20. Then we have evaluation and accreditation. We have also shown the trends that we have been experiencing as we accredit our private education institutions. Lately, we are observing that the institutions that are given a window period to improve have been increasing, reflecting that institutions apply without ensuring that they actually meet the criteria. So they have to be given this period to improve before they can qualify to be accredited as providers and of education. In addition, we've got evaluation and appraisal of new qualifications. We all know about the General Education Certificate qualification that the DBE has developed, and Umalusi was the whole of last year. There was a whole evaluation process, and at this point in time, as we move into the new financial year, the department has published the GC for public comment, and after that it will be back with Umalusi for approval and then registration with SAQA. In the APP, we've reflected a lot on empowerment of women, youth and people with disabilities as one of those things that we are expected to show in our reflection in the policy environment and performance environment, and also in our targets where it is possible. And we've done that by reflecting on four pillars of the gender-based violence and femicide strategy. And those pillars, one is on accountability, the other one on social cohesion and economic empowerment, and the last one on research and information. Performance environment continue, especially internally. We are a small organization with 138 positions, and we have reflected in the APP our workload challenges and also the need for an alternative funding to create more posts, and you know, so that we can have a balancing act between the amount of work that has to be done and the number of people that do that work. We have, however, maintained our vacancy rate under 10%. If we compare with 5 years from where we are today, our vacancy rate used to be very high. So we've put systems in place to make sure we remain under 10%. In terms of facilities, we are refurbishing a document. Sorry, we are refurbishing a building next door to where we are at the moment, which has always belonged to us, but it was mainly rented by, you know, other people that we rented it out to. And construction is in place. We are hoping that construction will be completed by the end of the second quarter, this financial year. In the old building, we are also working on, you know, having access ramps for people with disabilities so that the building is accessible. And the same has been taken into consideration for the building under construction. Financial resources and management, we managed to get a clean audit again last year because of the systems that are in place. But also we have to note that in terms of financial resources, there was a decline in generated income due to COVID-19. And here I'm referring to income that is generated by our own processes of certification and verification. And because of the drop that you see that I indicated earlier, it affected our revenue. But DBE or the department provided additional funding to the entities. In terms of ICT, to be able to work, especially within the COVID times, we needed to migrate to Microsoft 365. And we, as a result, we have also increased the bandwidth for Microsoft so that officials are able to operate without any hindrance. We also implemented a digital signature for management to be able to approve documents when operating remotely. Internally, we've introduced an additional communication platform. I don't know how this is pronounced, Yammer or whatever, I don't know. But what is important from the communications point of view also, we are planning for a celebration of Umalusi's 20th year. And the CEO will talk about that before closing. In terms of measuring performance, which is part C, here we are mainly going to be showing you our outputs and our outcome and impact. We have narrated about that in the APP to show how far we are in achieving our outcomes and the impact that we should be having in the education system. So these are just examples of a few outputs that we have. Otherwise, those outputs are reflected in detail in each program. I'm taking you to program one, which provides strategic leadership management and administrative services. It has got five sub-programs: strategy and governance, public relations and communications, information and communications technology, human capital management, and finance and supply chain management. So this is what program one is all about. And the targets that we've set for ourselves, this table shows the outputs that we are going to achieve. And then the output indicators are set as follows, and their respective targets. We've got number of advocacy webinars conducted. The target is 8 for the year, 2 per quarter. And the ICT network health score maintained above 95%. This is to make sure that our operations are never interrupted. If we maintain a health score above 95, then we are, 95% and above sure that business will continue as usual. Average vacancy rate maintained under 10% every quarter. That is the intention of the organization. Average number of days for payment of creditors and suppliers, as stipulated in the PFMA, we intend to keep it at 30 days. And then in program two, which is about qualifications and research, this is the program where we develop and manage an efficient and effective sub-framework within the National Qualifications Framework. And we also undertake research in this sub-program. And we've got two sub-programs. The first one is Qualifications Curriculum and Certification. And the purpose of the program is to manage the sub-framework, the sub-framework's qualification. I had already given an indication that, as an example, we were evaluating, or we are actively evaluating, the GEC qualification. So this is where that kind of an activity happens. And the second sub-program on statistical information and research, I think it speaks for itself. The data that we use during standardization, for instance, this is the sub-program that is responsible for that data and for the information and for the learner data that we keep at Umalusi. And then all research is undertaken here, and the results thereof are utilized to advise the ministers of education. For the targets that you set, the first target is number of reports produced on the management of qualifications in the sub-framework. We will produce one report at the end of the financial year. In terms of certification, number of reports on the certification of learner achievements, we are targeting 4. Every quarter we will have a report on that. And number of reports produced on the verification of qualifications in the sub-framework, we are targeting 4 again with a report in each quarter. And the final indicator, the fourth one, on production of reports in various formats, the target for this year is 5. We proceed to program 3, which is our last program. This is quality assurance and monitoring. Within this program, we ensure that providers of education and training have the capacity to deliver and assess qualifications registered on our SAP framework. And they do this to the expected standards and quality. And we have three sub-programs here. Two are related because they are both quality assurance of assessment, one for school qualifications and the other for post-school qualifications. And the third sub-program is on evaluation and accreditation of private education institutions. The targets that we've set for ourselves here, the first target, we will produce 10 reports on quality assurance of assessment, and they are spread across the quarters 2, 1, and 7 in the third up to the second up to the fourth quarter. The second indicator is on moderation of question papers per qualification. The intention is that no paper should be written without a more external moderation of question papers, and everything that we receive, we will do 100% of those question papers. The third indicator is on the number of assessment bodies audited for their state of readiness to conduct examinations. We do this across all the 9 provinces which are represented by the Department of Basic Education as one assessment body and the private assessment bodies. The fourth indicator is on the number of subjects for which verification of marking is conducted. We are targeting 90 subjects. And when we continue, number of subjects for which moderation of internal assessment is conducted, we are targeting 190. And then the sixth indicator and the seventh are on accreditation, evaluation and accreditation. The first indicator is the percentage of accreditation outcomes for private education institutions that we finalize within 12 months of doing a site visit. And the target there is 86%. And then the last one is on the percentage of private education institutions that are monitored after being granted accreditation. Our target there is 90%. And at this point, Honorable Chairperson, with your permission, I will hand over to the Chief Financial Officer to take us through the last section of the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, honorable members of the committee, colleagues from the Department of Basic Education, the Chairperson of the Umalusi Council, the CEO, and also colleagues from Umalusi and also colleagues from SAIS, thank you very much. In terms of the financial overview, the current financial year, it is with great thanks to the Department of Basic Education through all the relevant processes that Umalusi has received an additional 20 million rand in order for us to finance our activities of the current financial year, and also with a commitment of a total of 60 million rand additional over the MTF period. And this is really to a great assistance to the organization in order to deliver on its quality assurance mandate, and also to finance some of our ICT projects and processes that we need to do. In terms of our infrastructure project, this matter has been reported on previously and the process has commenced, and it is actually progressing extremely well. We are very happy with the progress that our contractor has made. It started in December with the actual construction after the site handover. And to date, we have just paid over 4 million or 10% of the total contract value of just over 40 million. This project is also supposed, and in terms of the timelines, running up to date, and it should be concluded by the end of August to finalize this project itself. And then also, we are currently in the final phase of our current financial year, where the financial year is coming to an end at the end of March. So all the financial year-end processes is currently underway in order to make sure that we are able to close our financial year successfully. Then in terms of the overview of the financial year 22-23 and also over the MTF outline period, Umalusi has a total budget of 186.6 million, which is approved for the 22-23 financial year. And our grant that we receive from the Department of Basic Education will increase by 3%. And in the 21-22 year after the 20 million rand addition, the total grant that we received was 157 million. And it will go up to 162 million during the 22-23 financial year. And I think it is also relevant just to mention that with the pandemic that have caused and the financial constraints in government, the National Treasury Institute some severe budget cuts to the sector, and Umalusi also have felt that cut to a large extent. And as a result, we actually had to motivate and demonstrate also our ability for financial discipline, as well as the financial management capabilities. And therefore, our grant has started to come back to its original status. And we are very thankful for also this oversight structure's assistance in this regard in order to get our grant back for the current financial year, 21-22, to 157 million, and that it will increase going forward. Now, in terms of the overall of the financial position, these are the six main resources that we have as Umalusi. The DBE grant, obviously, is the major source of income. Then we have verification of certificates, accreditation of providers, certification. We generate some interest, and we also have other quality assurance income. And over the MTF cycle, the honorable committee members will see that we've really had to go and redo our budget completely and make realistic projections going forward in terms of accreditation, certification, interest, and other income. And we had to downwards adjust them to make sure that our projections and the reality is also much closer. And therefore, you will see the red arrows going down in 22-23. And then from there onwards, 23-24, 24-25, you will see a slight increase in taking the process forward. Now, in terms of discussing these in detail, I know we are a little strapped for time, but very briefly, our revenue from certification has declined due to the subject certificates that are no longer printed. And as a result, this has got an impact. Our verification income is gradually returning to the pre-pandemic levels, and we anticipate that we will increase from around 19,000 certificates printed to about 22,000, and obviously that will have an impact on our income. The interest income will also decline, and this is as a result of the reserves that we will be using for paying our infrastructure project, number one. And number two, also the monetary policy that impact on the repo rate was at its lowest during April 2020 at 3.5%. Subsequently, with the world economy also start improving again, interest rates was increased by 25 basis points during November 2021 and again by 25 basis points in January 2022. And as a result, the income on the investment also in the long run will therefore improve, as our interest generation might help on the one side, but on the other side also with the payment of the utilizing of the reserves, it will reduce our investment. And the economic outlook is also that it might, the interest rate might increase throughout the current financial year. And also with the global economic position and the war that is currently going on and the effect that it has on the Brent crude oil prices, it could push our inflation also upwards, which will result in further interest increases. Our sundry income is expected to also decline due to a tenant vacating some space, as was already alluded to, and the billing of assessment bodies will increase with inflation as we adjust our tariffs on an annual basis. And I've already mentioned the grant that we are receiving from the Department of Basic Education that will increase by 60 million over the next 3 years. And that will reinstate the previous grant cuts by National Treasury. And this money will then be utilized to improve our ICT projects and systems, as well as our quality assurance processes. On the next slide is a summary of the revenue as over the MTF cycle in terms of how it was published in the national budget tabling over the three MTF years. So our 22-23 financial year, we'll have a total budget of 186.6 million. In 23-24, we will have 188.5 million. And in the 24-25 financial year, it will go up to 195.9 million rand. Now, in terms of compensation of employees, this is an area that we need to look, keep a close eye on. And Umalusi is following the strategies from the Department of Public Service and Administration, the DPSA, when we are improving conditions of service for our employees. It is worth mentioning that 28% of our total expenditure is allocated to quality assurance, and where administration is taking 40% of the budget. We need to look at this very closely, as Umalusi needs to cater for its own accommodation, security, cleaning services, ICT, and all the support functions also around running the organization. Goods and services is expected to marginally increase in line with inflation due to the increase of costs of flights, accommodation, and honorarium that is paid also to our contracted workers. And this is a process where we follow as part of the quality assurance processes. A provision was made for 3.5 million for capital expenditure, replacing computer equipment at the end of its lifespan. We have servers and other electronic equipment that needs to be replaced and also to be modernized. We have set aside 40 million rand for the refurbishment project of Tutumfundo building. And this project, as mentioned, is anticipated to be completed during by the end of August of the current year. Now, in terms of the revenue trends, what we've tried here to do is just to give some historical information. From 2017-18, the big blue bar is our grant that we receive from the Department of Basic Education as our main source of income. And you can see it was at 125 million, moved to 129, 135, then moved to 136. And with the 20 million rand additional that we've received during the current year of the 21-22 financial year, our grant now stands at 157 million. And for the 22-23 financial year, in line with our APP, it will go up to 162 million. And for the two outer years, then a small increment to 163 and also 269 million. In terms of the next slide, also we've tried to illustrate to the committee members the split between what we generate our own revenue as well as the grant that we receive. And you can see that for the 22-23 financial year, 87% of our income is based on the grant received and 13% is what we generate ourselves. The same pattern will follow in 23-24 financial year. And in the outer year, 24-25, we hope to improve by at least by 1% to 14% own revenue and 86% grant information. And Umalusi is, as mentioned already, trying to improve in terms of a new funding model in order to reduce the pressure that we also put in terms of the Department of Basic Education granting us the money through a grant. Now, in terms of the expenditure, this is basically just a table representing the various programs for administration, qualification, curriculum, and certification, the quality assurance assessment, evaluation and accreditation, and the statistical information and research over the MTF, as well as historical information. In terms of the next slide is just a graphical output of what I've just indicated. And there you can see the 40% in terms of the green of the administrative functions. And then basically 60% of the expenditure goes towards our national operation activities, in terms of the various classification areas of the organization. And then in terms of the last slide of the finance information is just a representative between compensation of employees versus goods and services, starting historically in 2017-18, where 57% was paid expensed as a result of goods and services, compared to 43% for employee costs. And as one can see currently in the current 21-22 financial year, it is estimated that our goods and services will stand at 51% compared to 49% in 21-22, it is 54% goods and services and 46% compensation of employees. For our next financial year, the 22-23 financial year, we will basically stand at a 50-50 split. And this is as a result of positions that was frozen during the start of the pandemic during 2020-21 and 21-22. We are now in the process of filling all of those vacancies as we return to office, and therefore the compensation will stand at a 50-50% split. And over the MTF cycle, we anticipate that this will go around at a 52-48% split in 23-24 and 53-47% in 24-25. But as an organization, we are also putting measures in place in order to address this so that we can move back where we were around the 2017-18-18-19 financial year, where 40 or around 42% of our total budget goes to compensation and we have more money available for goods and services. And this we will do through continued online processes and also the strengthening of our IT systems in order to address this matter. Chairperson, and if you allow, I will stop here and hand back to the CEO to finish up the last few slides. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Hendrik and Stella. Chairperson, Umalus will be celebrating its 20th anniversary this year under the theme, Two Decades of Education Guardianship, 2002-2022, and we'll be having a number of events to celebrate this important milestone. In some instances, we'll also send invitations to the members of the portfolio committee, depending on whether the pandemic allows us to have gatherings, you know, and celebrations of that kind. Having said that, also 2022 marked the end of the term of Umalusi's Fifth Council under the leadership of Professor John Volming, as he has also said. We are also planning a farewell function for the council in June, and also we are preparing to receive the new council as soon as the minister would have appointed them and their term starts. We plan to also officially open the Tutomfundo building in the third quarter of this financial year, 2022-2023. Let me, as I learned, take this opportunity to thank the Minister of Basic Education, Meiji Mutsekga, and the Deputy Minister, Dr. Muhaule, for their continued support, and also for the cash injection that they gave us of 20 million rand to save the organization and to allow us to continue to fulfill our obligations. And also thank Professor Volming and the council members for their continued support. Chairperson, finally, let me thank you and the members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education for the opportunity to present Umalusi's 2022-2023 Annual Performance Plan and the MTF budget. And also thank you for the guidance and advice that we always get from the Portfolio Committee. That advice is valued. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much to Umalusi, Prof, Doc, and both presenters. Thank you very much
Do we have Mr. Taylor, the chair of state, in the meeting?
Good morning, Chairperson. We don't have Mr. Tele here, but we have the Deputy Chairperson of Council. Thanks.
Okay, let me just hand over to him to just make some comments as well, and then after that, you may take over my headline.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. At first, let me, on behalf of Council, extend our greetings to the Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister and the DBE Senior Managers and colleagues, Umalusi Chairperson, CEO, and their entourage. Chair, allow us to add our voice in congratulating Honorable Adons as well. At first, I want to introduce our delegation as follows. At first, it is myself, the Deputy Chair of Council, Nkosi Phendule Ntantala, Councillor Mbata, who is representing the Executive Committee of Council, the CEO, Ms. Ella Mukhalane, the CFO, Mr. Maurice Mapindane, the Manager for Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, Research and Reporting, Ms. Duzana Sopete. That is our delegation chair. We welcome the opportunity to present our SAIS Annual Performance Plan. And we thank you very much for affording us the time and giving us the listening ear. And we look forward to the engagements with the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, Chair. With your permission, I will now hand over to the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. May I kindly request that the host give me the sharing rights? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, our colleagues from the department, Umalusi and SAIS, greetings to you all. As the Chairperson of SAIS has already indicated, we are presenting to yourselves the 2022-2023 SAIS Annual Performance Plan, including the budget. And therefore, in doing that, we'll start with the constitutional legislative and policy imperatives, starting with the SAIS Act, which is enabling legislation for SAIS as a professional regulatory body for teachers, and therefore, it has a responsibility and mandate to provide for the registration of educators, promote their professional development, and also set, maintain, and protect both the ethical and professional teaching standards. And therefore, in line with the SAIS Act, we then have four regulatory frameworks that are assisting us to make sure that those who are entering the teaching profession are fit for purpose, and also we maintain the ethical standards and the professional standards across the teaching profession and make sure that we've got capable teaching profession through managing a system for continuing professional development. In addition to the SAIS Act, we do take a cue from the National Development Plan, which is giving us directive in terms of the issues around quality provisioning of continuing professional development. Hence, the role of SAIS in continuing professional development, as well as ensuring professional teaching standards across the sector. education sector as a whole and not necessarily basic sector, because it applies both in basic and higher education. We are also working with directives from NQF Act in terms of us as a professional council being recognized as a professional body by the South African Qualifications Authority, and areas around initial teacher education, around practicing educators that we need to follow with regard to that particular directive. Obviously, the CPTD management system is coming directly from the NPF TED before it got into the SAFE Act, and therefore, even the integrated strategic framework on teacher education is directing us in terms of our quality management role, including a whole lot of other areas that we need to be dealing with around teacher education and development. And I think also just speaking about these two, National Policy Framework on Teacher Education and Integrated Strategic Training Framework on Teacher Education, there are issues within initial teacher education around quality of the teachers being produced by the country that we are working on together with the Education Dreams Forum, but also through the Teacher Development Summit that we just had late last year, and being coordinated by the ETDP CISA. Obviously, when we deal with issues around cases of teacher misconduct, we need to be working collaboratively with employers across the 9 provinces of teachers, including in the independent schooling sector, and therefore, Schedule 2 of the EEA, including Section 17 and 18, becomes important in terms of the relationship between states, in terms of the Code of Professional Ethics, and also the departments in terms of a Code of Conduct, and also the sanctions that we miss out are very important. So therefore, there's no way that states can work in isolation from the employers, in as far as the employment of educators is concerned, including the other pieces of legislation that I would not go through here, because they are more for the post-schooling sector rather than the basic education. While as a country we have the professional teaching standards, we have ethical standards, and also working on the development of educators, working on registration of educators, we are also working collaboratively with a whole lot of institutions in the African Union, but also Education International, UNESCO, in terms of making sure there's an alignment of the work that we're doing with these international bodies, and that we also align our standards with what UNESCO EI has, including a whole lot of frameworks on teacher education and development that are coming from ILO, UNESCO, and also that are being driven through Africa Agenda 2063. So yes, we're looking at the constitution internally and other legislation, but also at the international level. From a strategic point of view, our vision is about inspiring a credible teaching profession, given the fact that we all know that we've got an image and status and standing that is questionable because of the kind of things that are happening in the profession from conduct perspective, but also the quality perspective of teachers that are being produced and all that. And therefore, we need to have a vision that is there to make sure that we protect the credibility and also the integrity of the profession through both our ethical standards and also professional teaching standards. We have indicated that some of the things that are happening in schools and within the teaching profession might be because we somehow forgot about the values. And therefore, we brought back the values of the teaching profession, and we even went further to say to the Department of Higher Education and Training, there's a need to have all the student teachers that are being trained across the country understanding these values and being, and therefore when the MISA-TEC minimum requirements for teacher education qualification policy is finalized, it should reflect these values and make sure that all the student teachers that we are having in the country will be aligned in terms of understanding values of the teaching profession. On part B, from our strategic focus, we look at the updated situational analysis in terms of our performance environment. From external perspective, we are indicating that we are presenting the 2022-2023 APP against the background of the COVID-19 pandemic that we had in the last 22 months or so. We are also mindful of the imperatives of Education 4.0 that is informed by the fourth industrial revolution, and therefore it has got implications on the teaching profession in terms of the extent to which we are preparing our educators, whether from initial teacher education perspective or from continuing practicing perspective. To what extent are we looking at the competencies of the future, skills of the future, and skills of the 21st century and all that? We are also looking at our APP against the backdrop of the six administration priorities, including the whole issue of having whole education district development model that is there to make sure that we enhance service delivery to the educators at the coalface of the profession. And if you've checked our social media platforms, you'd have realized that for the last a year and a half or so, we've been working quite a lot with the districts, especially in KZN and Limpopo, because we were testing this model of whole education district model so that we can be in a position to infiltrate the schools and also the districts in terms of the kind of work that we are doing on ethical issues, on professional matters, lifelong learning, and also issues around teacher safety and security, including gender-based violence and sexual misconduct areas. We take note also from an external point of view of the proclamation of the ECD function shift from DSB to DDE, and we have internally within Council a dedicated ECD task team that is made up of SAIS, but also DBE, DHET, ECDP, CETA, and other stakeholders, so that we can begin to look at the professionalization issues within the context of the ECD policy, but also the HRD strategy that is there, from issues of development, curriculum, but also qualifications and professional registration of that particular sector. We are also noting, Chair, that we had the 2021 Teacher Development Summit, but also Human Resource and Development Council Summit, including DBE Lekgotla this year. And therefore, those resolutions that are emerging from those summits and also Lekgotla are very important in terms of making sure as we deliver the 2022-2023 APP, they are incorporated within that particular environment. From an internal perspective, we need to indicate that our database of registered educators is growing. We are reflecting the numbers for the year that ended, sorry, for the quarter that ended in 2021, December 31st, we had 36,887 educators that we registered. But we are also saying, given the ECD function shift, we will be registering more ECD practitioners. We've already dealt with the requirements from registration point of view. However, we're looking at the issue of whether is it necessary at this stage to be registering your 0 to 4 practitioners that are working in the space around 0 to 4, but those are the issues with that task team of ECD is dealing with in order to make sure that we delineate our responsibilities in good order. Obviously, we also working in sync, like I've indicated before, with making sure that we align with the government priority of professionalizing the public sector, and therefore the program that we're running of professionalizing the teaching profession within space, that is also linked to program 5. It's going on very well, and we will be giving progress as we continue. And also making sure that within the profession, we have a capable cohort of lifelong learners. And therefore, the CPTD management system, if you check the way in which we couch the sub-programs, but also the indicators, is to make sure that we address those kind of issues. We also want to indicate, Chair, that the program that is continuing to have challenges is the program 3, which is under Code of Professional Ethics. I've indicated in the presentation that because unlike your audit processes and unlike how other institutions not in education are dealing with areas where they can be in a position to monitor certain things in advance in a proactive manner, within education sector as a whole, it's not possible for us to have a proactive process of getting the reports in terms of where the code of professional ethics is violated. And therefore, because we have a reactive approach of enforcing the code of professional ethics, we'll continue to have challenges in terms of not being in control of the numbers of cases that we are receiving in a financial year period. And I'm also giving an example with something that is just happening that is unprecedented. For example, this financial year that we are closing at the end of March, we received 3 times the number of cases that we receive every year. And we're trying to analyze what's happening in the profession and also to see in the new financial year, when we come to the medium-term process of evaluating the strategic plan, what are some of the things that we can bring into place to make sure that we deal with those particular issues, but also we craft the indicators in such a way that we can deal with issues that we have control over. Because otherwise, with the manner in which we're receiving cases and the manner in which they are coming thick and fast, it's going to be difficult for us not to have rollover cases every year, because you can't deal with the whole process of investigation up to disciplinary hearings in a quarter or even in 2 months or 1 month. So all those challenges that we've highlighted, Chair, we are bring them to your attention and also indicate that we are looking into different ways of dealing with them. Part C is focusing more on measuring our performance, and therefore we are reporting, Chair, that we've got 6 different programs: administration, professional registration, ethical standards, professional development, professional teaching standards, and research. In line with all these programs, we are indicating our outcomes at a higher level. One being efficient and effective governance, which is aligned more with program 1, which is administration, and fit to practice registered educators and lecturers. We include lecturers because of the higher education part, post-schooling, TVET, and also CET, community education and training lecturers. And linked to program 3, we've got maintained ethical standards and also improved professional competence when it comes to program 4 that is dealing with continuing professional development and also issues around improved teacher professionalism that is linked to the whole process of professionalizing the teaching profession, but also dealing with the standards of the profession. On program one, Chair, in line with our outcome and also our output, we are presenting the first indicator that is making sure that council and the executive are functional as the accounting authority, and therefore we are planning 10 meetings in the entire financial year for them, and also making sure that planning, monitoring and evaluation and also reporting matters are being taken care of in terms of submitting the relevant reports to the executive authority with regard to the Minister of Basic Education, and therefore looking at 4 reports in the financial year. Our employees internally, it's very important that they also become lifelong learners. They are being supported from a training perspective, but also there's a relationship between the performance evaluation and management system that will bring up the needs of the staff and also the entire organization, and being addressed through the indicator that is dealing with training. And we are looking at 100% for the management of the performance evaluation and development system. And also we are looking at, my apologies, 30% with regard to percentage of trained employees in a financial year. Moving to the next page. Something is happening. I can't move my apologies, Chair. Let me, my screen seems to have frozen. Oh, okay. Thanks, I got it right. Okay. Then I'm moving to program two, which is on professional registration of educators. And remember, we indicated the outcome that we have on that one, which is school to practice registered educators. And therefore, what we are doing in the 2022-2023 is to focus more on making sure that the conduct of those that are entering the profession is fit, and also the qualifications that they have are genuine, because you from time to time hear of fake qualifications, but also from a conduct perspective, we are working very closely with the SAPS and even more with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in terms of vetting all the applicants against the National Register of Sexual Offenders. So those particular processes are going very well, and we will be having a pilot also with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, so that they can use the results that are coming from this, because we've been working with them for the past 2.5 years, can be in a position to inform the entire sector. Program three, which I've spoken about earlier on, is on ethical standards, maintenance of ethical standards. One is on investigations, because remember, when the case is reported, the first part that we do after screening is to make sure that we in the processes or foreclosure if we don't have sufficient evidence for us to continue with disciplinary process. But I also indicated earlier on that because you unavoidably have rolled over cases, we've decided to split the investigations into two, so that you don't leave the cases that are coming in the financial year that we're dealing with, but also do not dealing with the rolled over cases. So we've got parallel processes that are moving in terms of dealing with those two cases. More panelists have been trained to make sure that we increase capacity at that level to deal with more cases as far as possible. So we've got 70% for percentage of finalized investigation cases that come into the 2022-23 that will be carried over hearings. Again, we've assessed, we've done an analysis from the historical cases that we had, and also the processes and also the challenges that we continue to face with regards to the witnesses, the parents, and a whole lot of other factors that need a holistic approach. And therefore, you'd realize that the percentages that are in investigations are a little bit higher. And that is because with investigations, we're not having too many challenges in terms of dealing with that. But when it comes to disciplinary hearings, because then people are thinking of bread and butter issues of losing cases, that's where we're having a whole lot of challenges. But also parents are not making it easier for us, as we've already indicated and indicated previously. And therefore, we've dropped the indicators a little bit so that we don't bite more than we can chew in terms of not being realistic with regards to what we can be in a position to deal with. Council has established a dedicated task team again to look into a bigger process in terms of how can we deal with this program as a whole. Because that's where we're not winning, because of the factors that I've indicated earlier on, that are, some of them that are beyond control. For example, the cases that are coming in, they don't have control in terms of how many you'll get in a financial year, and also the kind of resources that we have might not even be in a position to deal with that. The third sub-program is on sanctioning, which once we've dealt with disciplinary hearings, we do analysis of the verdicts and also sanctions that we have meted out, and therefore have a report that will give us an indication of issues that are coming up, but also whether are we not having gaps of enforcing the sanctions themselves, because it will be a futile exercise to have the whole process with a whole lot of financial resources and human resources. And at the end of the day, when enforcement is supposed to be happening from state perspective, but also from other institutions, it's not happening. And that's where, again, you have a challenge, because the enforcement of a sanction is dependent on a whole lot of other partners for it to be happening effectively and 100%. Program 4 is on professional development. It has got three sub-programs. And I need to remind honorable members that this is the program that we had challenges with when we were reporting for the annual report 2020-2021. We did go back. We took some advice from yourself in terms of the comments and input that we received. We worked on the remedial action plan. We also want to report and appreciate the support that we are also getting from the DBE in terms of branch T bilaterals between states and DBE, but also from the planning section in terms of making sure on a regular basis we are really working hard to make sure that systems and processes are in order to deal with this thing, this process accordingly. And therefore, there are two indicators that are pertaining to educators as members of SAIS. And the first indicator is more about number of educators confirmed to have learned and a minimum of 50 professional development points in a year. This indicator would be able to indicate to us the kind of professional development received, the quality, and whether is there any relationship between what educators have done, 25,000 of them, and also learner performance or learning outcomes within the school. We may not have direct correlation, However, you may be in a position to see certain indicators that might be that should give you that comfort or not give you the comfort. The other one is on number of educators supported on professional matters. We just indicated that we're having challenges around the teaching profession as a whole. We continue to have gender-based violence. We continue to have sexual misconduct cases. We continue to have safety and security issues and a whole lot of other professional matters within the profession. And therefore, including encouraging them to participate in the CPTD management system and the culture of continuing professional development as a whole. And therefore, the 40,000 educators that we plan for, we will be able to analyze also the extent to which we've managed to reach as many educators as possible. And this is where we're also working very closely on the CPTD with the district, whole district development model, but also through the weekly webinars that we're having throughout the year on a Monday and Wednesday to make sure that we reach as many educators as possible. And it has been possible because we're now closing the year with about 24,000 to 25,000 educators that have been participating in this session. Quality management is what I've indicated earlier on with regard to the role that we play in terms of approving professional development providers, approving endorsed professional activities, and also making sure that we go back and observe what is being provided from the approved providers, but also from the endorsed professional development activities. And this is very important also because we need to assess the value for money in terms of the grant that state is also receiving from the department with regards to, from fiscal through the department with regard to this program. We are looking at 75% of providers, 85% of endorsed activities, and also 10% from the pool of the financial year. Program 5 is on professional teaching standards. This is a program that is dealing with the professionalization of the teaching profession and making sure that we have the entire teacher education and development continuum. That is from when I want to apply to become a teacher until I retire. So the standards need to be applied and enforced and implemented throughout the continuum, throughout the chain from teacher education to when the teacher exits the system. And therefore, on an annual basis, we're going to be focusing on two standards at the beginning out of the 10, and therefore move to 4 and all that so that we can do thorough work and make sure that the entire profession has been familiarized with the standards and teachers in particular. We've got specific programs that will be able to also intervention programs, two of them on the whole process of professionalizing the teaching profession. The last one before I hand over to the CFO is on research. Remember, as part of the SAFE Act, we have, just like humanity, responsibility to advise the ministers, either basic or higher education, on professional matters, but also on broader educational matters when necessary. And therefore, this is the area that I think from the quarterly reports that we're receiving from the DBE, we haven't been doing very well, but we are looking at enhancing the capacity that we have so that we can be in a position to inform the advisory of the minister, but also the entire teaching profession. But also we have registers, for example, register of teachers that come for professional registration, register of ethical misconduct cases and CPTD system. And therefore, the sub program will deal with statistical reports so that we can begin to understand the kind of profession we have in terms of the standing and status and the esteem and the prestige on an annual basis. So this program in particular in terms of the sub-program on data management in Zimbabwe. Therefore, you can move quickly to the budget part.
No, thank you, CEO. Thanks, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Let me quickly run through the budget of SAIS over the medium term period. Let me indicate that to redress the situation of budget, the Council in 2021 sat down and took a decision to review its funding. It has decided to review its funding from now onwards on an annual basis to alleviate the situation which we used to face, whereby we would increase in a particular year and we take 3 to 4 or 5 years before an increase. And at that time, the operation of Council would be suffering. They have decided that on an annual basis, they will look at the status of funding with the aim to do the necessary adjustment of the main source of funding, which is membership. So far, they have taken a decision now to increase its subscription, annual educator subscription from 180 to 198, effective from this financial year, starting April. Approval has already been granted in that regard. Such an increase brought about an additional revenue of 8 million to our total revenue, which we same time had to project it over the MTF until another decision is taken to inform the future. Proper consultation with the teaching fraternity on such an increase was done. What we have observed as well, due to the pressure which is facing the fiscals, is the cutting of budget, whereby one of our funding which comes from government in respect of CPTD was cut by 5 million for the coming years. We don't know what will happen in the following year, but so far in the year under consideration, 5 million was reduced. That caused the council revenue to remain constant despite the additional 8 million subscription increase, because the reduction also reduced the total revenue when you look at the registration fees as well. There is a decline of 2 million, and on some other small items, there are some reductions, which now it squares almost the same 8 million which the council increased was reversed in terms of the total revenue. However, that does not affect the entire operation of the council. What we have done to counter that is to maintain the administrative cost of council to remain constant as the year before, as in 2022, by implementing stringent cost containment measures. And on the other hand, we ensured that except the CPTD, which is funded from the fiscus, the other operating functions, mandatory functions, have received an increase in terms of their budget so that they can improve in terms of service delivery. In addition to that, the council is moving end of the month in wherever it was in terms of the provincial offices which were operating. We are moving into three new building infrastructures which the council has already operated, one in Durban, one in East London, one in Bloemfontein. We are moving into our own premises where we'll not be paying rentals. We'll be maintaining the properties. In addition to that, after seeing that we have completed the move into the current offices which we were busy with, the council will be considering feasibility study in the first quarter for the remaining three provinces, which is Mpumalanga, Northwest and Northern Cape, to ensure that all educators access SAIS with an ease. There should be an office in each and every province. So the council will be conducting that feasibility study to ensure that it is accessible by all teachers in the country. Currently, one would declare that there is no rental in terms of office accommodation for the council at the moment, because we have moved into our own buildings where we're renting. The rental contracts are coming to an end by end of March. One would indicate that based on this budget, if approved by yourself, the council will be able to operate and deliver the desired results accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are done.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much from SAIS for the presentation. Members, those are the budget plans of both the entities, Umalusi and SAIS. Can I note handed that is the end of Honorable Morwatsetla? Only. Can I allow you, Principal, to speak?
Mulida Studo, good day. And a good day to all members on this all important platform. Extending our appreciation for the Deputy Minister leading the call, and also the two entities, Umalusi and SAIS. We must also appreciate the presence of the Evergreen Director General, who connects even when he's in the water, deep, rural, in Nkanta and or Lusukisuki, he will connect. And we want to commend him for that. It's a sign of hard working and availability. Let us appreciate and welcome the two presentations, Chairperson, and also congratulate the VP from the African National Congress, Mama Duans, Honorable Aduans, for her achievement. And that is a sign that you are never old to learn. We congratulate you, Gladys, Madam Aduans, and keep it up. And let us also welcome the fact that Umalusi will soon be celebrating their anniversary. 20 years is not a child's play. We appreciate you. And Prof. and Dr. Ragomir, for the achievement that you are about to acquire. I don't know the exact date, but I hope you'll invite us for the cake. Let me go straight now to the questions, Mulula Studo, or comments. I will start right away with Umalusi. Ndate Ragomir, one of the major challenges we are faced with in our era, in almost all the departments, let alone their entities, the entities that are attached to those departments, is the challenge of budget cuts. Yet, the budget cuts will always come our way. But from your APP presentations, and it becomes clear that the mandate keeps on growing. Given the two contradictions, my question now is, how is the entity planning to address this contradiction, operating with a budget cut, yet with an increased mandate? Because the two appear not to be informing each other accordingly. Can you share with us how have you planned in your annual performance plan to deal with this kind of a challenge? That's the first question. The second question, it's to Uma Lucy, is given the fact that from time to time you report in your presentations that there are a number of your employees who are using you as a springboard, and they come to Uma Lucy when you have taught them excellent work and operation, and they see greener pastures, they leave you, and of course you don't have the powers to hold them. How then, or let me just establish, if Uma Lucy could be having any vacant and unfilled vacancies, and if they be there, because it is not going to be proper to operate with a skeletal structure or a skeletal staff without overburdening other members of the staff, are you sure all the vacancies are filled? And if not filled, what could be any such possible challenges? Dr. Agwebe. The last question, Mudula Studio, will be with regard to Sage. I always indicate that Sage used to be my hope for more than 12 years. I was with this entity. And therefore, it would be unfair of me to overburden them with questions which I also should be responsible for answering. But one of the challenges, the question which I feel I must unreservedly present, is that in the presentation, the CEO shows that there are a number of cases that remain unresolved. And you and I will agree, and they will go further and indicate that those cases remain unresolved simply because the witnesses do not want to come forward and corroborate so that the cases should be brought to their logical conclusion. Now my question is, we understand, I know from the traditional black people, people do not want to be involved in being witnesses in many cases. And I must further indicate that, Chairperson, if it was not because of the white lady, even today we wouldn't be knowing who killed Kritani. But the white lady, something very strong, with our white counterparts, stood up and phoned when she saw people, the men, Janusz Walus killing Kritani. And it's not happening with us. And I think it is about time that we must also wake up and be ready to witness. So I want to know that given the situation where we have got unresolved, a number of unresolved cases, what is Sage planning in order to address this kind of a situation wherein cases remain unresolved simply because we don't have witnesses who are coming forward to corroborate and give evidence to that effect? Maybe I should stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Principal. No, Dada?
I'm done, Chair.
Chair, my honorable Chair?
Yes.
Thank you so much. Good morning, Chair, and good morning to everybody. I just have three questions, one for SACE and two for Umalusi. The first one would say, I think on numerous portfolio committee meetings, I've indicated that there's quite, a gap in terms of the quality of teaching or quality of teachers that we need to produce, or teachers that are qualified in maybe critical subjects, as the example that I've shared about the Northern, Northwest and the Northern Cape, having a shortage of technical mad science teachers, an example, and not being able to attract them. So with that preface, I just wanted to check with SACE. How are they using their register to basically inform the supply and demand of educators in the country as a whole, and whether they do share that information with DBE for it to be used, for an example, to inform what bursary applicants we take for Funza Lushaga, or in terms of the full development of teachers so that we fill any skills gap in the space. Secondly, for Umalusi, my first question was covered by Honorable Morotela, but I just wanted to check with Umalusi, with the development of the online or blended learning framework that DBE has put out, we have seen that there's quite a lot of private or independent or homeschool education that does take place in the country. Does Umalusi, in any of its plans, have any contribution towards the legislation that needs to come out dealing with private institutions or private learning, homeschool learning, and online or blended learning? I know there was a discussion a couple of years ago when there was a need to review the South African Schools Act and the Employment of Educators Act regarding on homeschooling and basically regulating online schooling to ensure that there is quality assurance and quality outcomes as part and parcel of Malusi's mandate. So I wanted to check whether there has been any contribution from Malusi in that regard when it comes to the development of that type of legislation, or they are playing any specific role to ensure that where there is no regulation for quality outcomes and quality education, we influence the legislation as legislators ourselves to ensure that there is such. If I can get a comment on that. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you very much to you, Honorable Chairperson, and colleagues in the Portfolio Committee. And thanks to Professor Volmink and Dr. Rakometse, who presented first. I just have one question under this one. I'm worried about the workload challenges which they're experiencing in Umalusi. Because they definitely have to impact on the work done, and one would like to know how maybe quickly they think they would be able to make up for that. Is maybe the reinstatement of that sum of money, about 60 million rand, going to assist from the Department of Education. But then I have a question too for SACE. Thanks for the presentation to the CEO, Ella, and she talks about 36,000 plus educators that have been enrolled, that who are in the database as at 31st of 2021. I hope that refers to a particular period. I am interested in the total number of educators that have been enrolled. It might not be an accurate figure to the dot, but I'm interested in knowing how many educators do we have now out of the total number of educators? How many do we have in the database?
Secondly, I just wish to ask a question based on the turnaround. What is the turnaround or in the cases that get reported to SACE? It might be difficult to answer this one, but I'm taking an ordinary case reported to SACE. I know that they would differ in terms of complexities and so on. Thirdly, I just wish to check whether can SACE give us an assurance that all the investigations that take place, they do get proper attention timelessly, because I might have a view in terms of what a different view in terms of what one is experiencing on the ground, but I'm not saying she must respond on the basis of that, because we're looking at the holistic picture here. I also have a question on the enforcement of sanctions, and it's very brief and short. It's brief. The enforcement of sanctions. How much do the provinces cooperate in terms of the enforcement of sanctions? I do know that enforcement of sanctions usually become a very big problem. In particular, I have I have experienced this with the other entity, for an example, the ELRC, where we find that the departments now, in the provincial departments now, do not want to enforce the sanctions timelessly. And lastly, I don't know who is going to respond to this one, but maybe it's a comment. There seem to be a longer time now in the turnaround in terms of reprinting and processing of certificates, in particular those of grade 12. What would be the cause, and is there anything that can be done to speed that up a little bit? I do not know whether this one would be responded by SACE or the department. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Nopala. Resuela?
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Well, let me also welcome the presentation by both the entities. And Chair, you will pardon me if I've asked a question that probably may have been asked, because I have been in and out of the meeting due to network problems. The first question, probably I would like to direct to Uma Lucy. Given the vacancy rate that exists in the entity, and also given the fact that there was also COVID, which might have contributed to them not filling the post, should it happen that the regulations be eased and it becomes necessary for people to return to offices, will Uma Lucy be in a position to fill those vacancies? The second question probably that I would like to ask is to SACE. I just want to know from them whether the information or the data that they have regarding educators is being used to inform the department on the demand and supply of educators. And lastly, with regard to reported cases, I just want to know how effective are the seized investigators? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Reswell. Honorable Atwang?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And let me also thank you for acknowledging my graduation during the weekend. Thank you very much to all the members for congratulatory messages. I'm truly humbled. Chair, let me also congratulate Umalusi for 2 decades of unbroken service and of excellence in quality assurance and their dedicated work in keeping a high standard for constantly obtaining clean audits. We really appreciate such a work that has been put by individuals and team from Umalusi, led by Professor Volmik and Dr. Rakumi. I'm sure we'll be invited, like the principal has requested, when you do the celebration. Chair, let me also appreciate the 2 presentations of the APPs and their budget reviews. They were straightforward and very informative, so that we can see what is being, you know, what is planned ahead for this coming year or coming financial year. Chair, on the Umalusi, Chair, I have only one question, and it is with regard to what is being a thorny issue to all the members on the issue of vacant posts. But I did understand the explanation given, but mine is a different one. It's also with regard to the staff component, or whether there are any internships that are provided by Umalusi. As we know, we're facing a very serious challenge with youth employment and also skills development. So is there an experience of our young people, more especially after they graduated? So is there any internship that is provided? That I believe if there are internships, it will also close the gap of some of the vacancies that Umalusi faces as and when their official or employees leave for better opportunities. That is the only question I have. And to say is, when we deal with the issue of, you know, cases that are reported, you know, in SAIS that is reporting cases of, you know, whether it's misconduct of educators, whether it's, sexual offenses that they are found to be, you know, guilty of. I think, you know, it says a lot, you know. You ask yourself so many questions that if people that you regard as being educated, that will understand, you know, doing right and wrong, and they are found, you know, doing these things repeatedly everywhere, you know, not stopping, cases increasing. You know, it's really a serious concern. And also, I think COVID has also shown us that even during hard lockdown, when learners were or children were with their parents at home, there were those cases happening right inside, you know, a home. It poses a serious concern to say what kind of a nation are we. But I would want to pose a question to Umalusi to say, what are other initiatives that you are planning to have, you know, because some of the cases, as I've alluded, they are not, you know, within, you know, the school vicinity. They are always happening outside. What is, you know, the role of SAIS with regard to reaching out to whether those children or educators that are doing those kind of things outside the school. Secondly, it's on the issue of the offices that you are planning to build for in the entire provinces. Let me also appreciate that you have managed to take our advice and look into having offices in the entire country, in all these provinces. It's highly, highly appreciated. And I'm sure it will yield a positive and results and progress as time goes by. But my question is that, you know, before you think about building, because one other thing that also COVID taught us was that you can work everywhere. You know, we're sitting at home, but we're managing to connect, you know, online. We did not need any office space to do the work. Have you looked into having to check in other avenues, how, you know, cost effectively you can have your own space, you know, represented in provinces, looking into buildings that belong to other departments of government, looking into discussing with them to take over those buildings and convert them to offices or renovate them at a cheaper rate than building from scratch. Chair, those are my questions. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much to all the members that have participated in the interrogation of both the entities. I just want to raise some few issues. Maybe I should start with face. You know my concern with the presentation, particularly on the finances. I don't know whether I'm being fooled by Omar's presentation, which is very clear that they received they are receiving 3% additional money, and they are getting 20 million, which is meant for ICT and blah blah blah. I think you are very silent on the money that you are supposed to approve as the entity, as SAIS. And not unless it's me who did not really get to that, or maybe it was so easy for me to understand from Umalusi, and it's then difficult to get it from your side as SAIS. If we can just get clearer into the amounts and what are they for. I know there are serious budget cuts, but also you should remember when you present to us, you are presenting to laymen. I mean, we are just from the streets, us. So when you speak of these serious issues that we must, at the end of the day, approve, we should be able to understand we are approving from what angle and what amount
And I'm not actually saying that you should have a presentation which is like Kumalusi's presentation, but I'm saying in terms of clarity, for us also to be at the same understanding, like yourselves. Secondly, there is an increased subscription from 180 to 198 rand per teacher, which you have mentioned that you will be effecting or you have effected. It's an 18 rand increase per educator in out of all the educators that you are having. Now, how does these subscriptions increases benefit the educators which are they are being taken from? I'm raising this. There is a slide, I think, on program 4 where you are saying that it's under member support, where you are saying that the output indicator, where you are saying that you are supporting educators on professional matters, and the number you have put at that, it's 20,000. Now, I'm not sure whether it's me, 20,000, how do you identify it, and from what provinces mostly? And who stands to benefit versus who? And 20,000, is it not a small number in terms of the teachers that have registered with you as an entity? And partly, Honorable Adwans has covered me with regards to the issue of the building that you are building in provinces. And I must also just probably add in saying that thank you very much for the fact that you are building offices in all provinces, and this year my province is included. Thank you very much for that. But on top of the question that Honorable Adwans raised, can you make us understand, is there any legal mandate on the entities purchasing the buildings? And after you have purchased, for instance, the offices that you have in other provinces, once you have purchased them, who owns those buildings? Are they owned by the departments? Are they owned by government? Or are they owned by yourself as the entity? And then under program 6, you are saying that there is a research report that you are talking about. Where is this research report published, and is it accessible for particularly the teachers, but rather for South Africans altogether? Coming to Umalusi, let's congratulate you. Let's congratulate you for the services that you have been rendering to our country, and very efficiently, professional as well. And my concern is your compensation versus employees compensation of employees versus the goods and services on your budget. Looks like you are more now going to use budget in compensating employees, which is not the picture that we would want to see as the people that are doing oversight on yourselves. But of course, the situation that we have been in our country of the pandemic, it has forced us to understand that such things you had to take decisions very quickly. But if you compare that for the past 3 years, it's more your budget, it's more lenient to compensation of employers, is moving towards that direction and consistently. The reality 3 years from now, if the pace continues the way we set it, we are going to see a situation where most of your budget is rather for compensation of employees, and that is actually happening in most of the departments. We wouldn't want to see that. We wouldn't want to see that with Umalusi. So, are there any plans to try to stop it, to curb it, before it goes further? It is at it's ticking. It's worrying now where it is. I think you probably have to look at it as Umalusi. The second question is with this two-ton Pondo building that you are anticipating to finish next year, second quarter. I'm not sure whether it's me who's got a hearing problem or I did not understand. Can you just briefly tell us, are you now at 10% expenditure or are you at 28% expenditure on it? Whether I'm talking about two different buildings, because I think there where you started the presentation, there was a 10%, and then when we were towards the end, there was 28%. So can we just get clarity? And also, you are not telling us, no, you did, you told us that this project is the one of 40.1 million, a lot of millions there that you have mentioned. Okay, so those are my questions from my side. Deputy Minister, can I ask you then to lead the responses?
Thank you, Chair. Let me allow the team from both entities to respond, and then where we feel there will be gaps, PG is also in the meeting, and PDGs, they will add where there's a need. And I will also add if there's a need. Thank you, Chair.
Malusi, thank you, DM.
Thank you, DM. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I'm going to respond to the questions that have been raised by the members, and the inputs are truly appreciated. Let me appreciate your congratulatory messages on the celebration of the 20th anniversary of Umalusi. The congratulatory messages will be conveyed to Council. Yes, indeed, Chairperson, as indicated by Honorable Muratsehla, we are facing budget challenges, and it is all over. The fiscus is facing serious pressures, and we are beginning to experience budget cuts. At the same time, it is at the time when our mandate is expanding, unfortunately. And that our mandate is expanding is not something that is much of a surprise to us. It was expected. Because if you were to look at our founding act, the Genfetwa Act, section 16, paragraph 4 of the Genfetwa Act, this is under the functions of council, and this section of the act lists a number of functions that the council performs. But 16.4 says the council, with the approval of the minister, may assume its functions progressively depending on its capacity. So yes, indeed, since our establishment, we have been expanding our functions on an incremental basis. And the minister has also been brought on board on all the developments. For instance, it would be areas like new subjects that are added to the curriculum. It expands the mandate. New qualifications, it expands the mandate, and it stretches the budget. Even in the beginning, we did not do evaluation and accreditation of private schools, FET colleges, adult centers in the manner in which we do. We just made it a bit more expensive. So that is bound to stretch our budget. And we will need more money. And I'm not sure how to approach this matter in the light of the constrained budgets of government. We'll have to develop two strategies. One is to continue to knock at the door of the minister and say, Minister, we are facing budget pressures. Please increase our budget. And also the national treasure. Or we can follow the strategy that we are now in discussions with the department on, that is to establish a new funding model. The CFO of Umalusi and the CFO of the DBE are in discussion on the new funding model, which we can only implement if the minister agrees and national treasurer agrees. So I'll not get into the details of that, because the details around the new funding model, where we'll be generating our own funds, still has to be chiseled out with the department before I can go around talking about it. On the second point raised by Honorable Murat Sessa, yes, indeed, we have become poaching ground for people with skills. And this problem has now recently been compounded by the fact that the public service in general, including Umalusi, is not increasing the salaries of the staff. And how the staff are able to beat inflation is by job hopping from one government department or from one entity to the other. Because as they join the new department, as they join the new entity, they are able to negotiate a better salary. That's how they are able to beat inflation at the personal level. But then we suffer, because then people are forever on the move. Chairperson, yes, indeed, we froze some positions at the start of the pandemic under hard lockdown level 5, level 4, level 3. And now that things are opening up, we have started to fill in the vacant positions, the positions that became vacant at that time, and that we froze to save money, because we are saying we are at home. How do we train new people to get absorbed into the system? It will be fruitless expenditure, because we'd appoint them, they'll be at home, there'll be no one to give them work, there'll be no one training them on how to work even from home. So we froze some position and we declared this to council and even to this portfolio committee. We are beginning to fill in those positions now that we are 100% back to work. We are 100% back to work now. So we are dealing with that problem. Honorable Nodata is raising the issue of our involvement in the development of online learning policy. Yes, Honorable Nodata, the department has invited us to participate in the task team that is discussing this matter. And we are continuing to give our input. A senior manager for evaluation and accreditation is a permanent member of the task team of the Department of Basic Education. And we gave our comments even as she goes to those meetings. There are times when the department writes to me to say, give your inputs as the whole organization, not the individual. And we are continuing to do, to give comments on the framework. Once there will be legislation in place to govern online, online education, the department will register the institutions. And upon registering them, they can then come to us for accreditation. But there is a point that I want to emphasize. We will not accredit any institution that does not offer qualifications that are on our SAF framework. It has to be qualifications that are on our SAF framework of qualifications. That is very important. Honorable Nobo, indeed, the workload remains a challenge. Our responsibilities have increased, as I indicated in my opening statements, have increased over the years, as I've read also from the founding legislation of this organization. But the increase in responsibilities has not been proportional to the budget we get from the department and to the budget that we are able to generate. Hence the need for a new funding model. And also, if we were to follow the strategy of appealing to the Minister and National Treasury for an increase in the budget, the turnaround time is not as fast as we would want it to be. And then that overstretches the staff in the meantime. But if we were to develop a new funding model, the Minister approves it, we'll be also in consultation with the Minister, be able to increase the income, you know, much more faster than it is the case now. With regards to the printing of the certificates, Honorable Ngobo, the exams are written. There are students who ask for a remark after the release of the results. There are students who ask for the viewing of the scripts. There are lost scripts. There are instances where a student would have written English at home language level instead of at first additional language. Just as an example, where he has been given a wrong question paper in the exam room, he doesn't realize it, he continues to write only to find that he's not supposed to have written that paper one at home language level, but at first additional language level. So we have to do the mopping up of all those things, you know, a mopping up of all those things and give concessions should the need arise. And then only then the department is able to submit data to us. Data sets to us to say you can certify. I've just shared with the senior manager for certification, Dr. Eva Suji. We are beginning to get the data sets from the department for the October-November 2021 examinations to certify. And she was able to confirm that we have to date received from two provinces and will be able to certify still in March, Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga. And the others usually follow thereafter. In April, we'll still be certifying the results of last year. Honorable Suwela, I need to indicate that on the question of vacancies and COVID, I've already responded to that. And also add that with the COVID-19 regulations having been eased recently, the UMRC staff is currently 100% at the office. We're 100% at the office. And we are filling in the vacancy. However, with the war in Russia and Ukraine, I read in the newspaper last week that with the increasing petrol price, government may say we should work from home again. That is not yet official. It was in the newspapers. So the situation is still as unstable as that. But regarding Umalusi, we have already advertised the frozen posts and we are in the process of filling them. Honorable Aduons, on the question of internships, Umalusi traditionally does not have a budget provision for internships. However, between us and ETDP CETA, who are the CETA operating in our space, in 2019, we met and agreed that ETDP CETA in the development of skills in our sector is going to give us an allocation from which we're going to appoint interns at Umalusi, and we'd have to account to them on how that money has been used. Unfortunately, that arrangement was overtaken by the COVID pandemic and the hard lockdown, and we have not revisited the plan because we are just about to implement with ETDP CEDA, where the budget provision would have come from them so that we train skills for the education sector. We will resuscitate that discussion now that things are beginning to be normal. on the question of compensation, Honorable Chairperson, versus goods and services, I'll ask the CFO, Mr. van der Waal, to respond. I'll respond on the question of 10% versus 28%. Because I tried to check quickly our slide presentation. Indeed, on the Thutomfundo building, we have to date spent only 10%. The total budget for that building project is 40 million, and we have to date paid the contractor 4 million. So the 28% should be talking to something else, and I'll refer you to slide number 32. It is the budget of the Quality Assurance of Assessment in the organization, QAA unit, which quality assures all the examinations, the NSC metric, NATED programs, NCD, and so forth and so on. That is the budget. So it does not talk to Thutomfundo at all. And I think the CFO can confirm when he responds to the compensation and goods and services budget. Chairperson, I want to pause. I think I've answered all the questions. CFO?
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chairperson. CEO, yes, just to confirm the last point, you're 100% correct. We have spent 4 million out of the 40 million on the current contract. That represents 10% with regard to the Thutomfundo building project. And we are in line with our cash flow projections in terms of that. And the 28% is what we have highlighted is with regard to quality assurance allocation for the new year. Chairperson, then in terms of the position of compensation versus goods and services, your observation is 100% correct. And as the CEO has already alluded to in his feedback with regard to the vacancies, if you look at the financial year 2020-2021, as well as 21-22, during the timeline of the pandemic, we were standing at 49% versus 51% goods and services during 2020-21. And in 2021-22, it standard at 46% versus 54% compensation versus goods and services. And then looking into the future, it gives for the 22-23 year a 50-50%, and then a 52-48, and a 53-47. And you're quite right, Jefferson, that is a concern to the organization, and it's definitely a matter that we are focusing on. But it is the balancing act between filling the vacancies on the one side, number two, the budget cuts and the financial constraints that we are receiving, and based on the economic climate, that makes it difficult to reduce the split to a 40-60%, which I believe would be a more ideal. And this is where historically we also were coming from as an organization, to be able to have 40% compensation versus 60% goods and services. However, the pandemic has also learned us that some of our functionalities are being able to do online, and this was also being referred to previously, where we would do site visits at institutions physical. That is now possible by means of data connections and with the assistance of video facility also. Institutions can be verified by means of online meetings. That will definitely cut certain cost implications around travel and subsistence and so forth. So as much as that is also part of our strategy, is to reduce in terms of certain types of expenses, Compensation of employees is a critical matter, and with the filling of positions, that is why you currently see that trend. But hopefully, when our services and the public of South Africa is requiring more of our services, and we will get some income out of self-generating, that perception will change a little bit, and that we are able to go back to an area of having a lower compensation versus goods and services split. And that is the approach that we're currently taking, bearing in mind also that a lot of Umalusi's work is labor intensive from the organization perspective, and therefore we need to have the staff members with our progressively taking over of new functions also, that the human resources are necessary in order to perform these functions on a full-time basis, and hence the movement is there. And I think if one look at education departments in provinces also, they are sitting in a much worse position where it comes to compensation versus other expenses. I'm aware of provinces that sits with around 85% compensations versus 15%. But most definitely, this is a worrying factor, and we're keeping a close eye on this matter to actually reduce this as we go forward as far as we possibly can. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson, can I just come back to just one small point on the certification data? Only four provinces have not yet submitted, and it is not any fault of their own. They're still mopping up. It's not a crisis. It's KZN, Gauteng, Free State, and Northern Cape. The rest have submitted and will be printing certificates before the end of this month. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Doc.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the questions and inputs and feedback provided. Let me start with the issue raised by Honorable Moratsa regarding the number of cases not resolved and what are the plans to address the challenges that have been highlighted in the presentation. Let me start by indicating that educator misconduct, in their nature, they involve learners, they involve parents, they involve communities, and a whole lot of other factors. And therefore, when you deal with them, you need to be having a holistic approach that will look into legislative matters from different angles. It should be said, yes, but then you need to look into the Employment of Educators Act. You need to be looking into ELRC, DSDD, OJC, and others. I'll give you an example. We had a case that we were discussing with the General Secretary of ELRC. When you have the says Code of Professional Ethics, it says that an educator is not supposed to be having a sexual relationship with a learner. It doesn't matter when. But then when you deal with the Employment of Educators Act from that side, it says in a school. And that interpretation would say in a school where I'm working. Therefore, an educator might win a case from the employer side, but not necessarily win a case from the say side or in impact, then the parent might say, I'm not taking my child again to that particular process. So from a legislative process, which the bilaterals that we're dealing with Branch T and ELRC are trying to look into those issues so that we can close the gaps that we are having. But also there are issues around communities and parents that you need a dedicated advocacy and communication process that will really educate
our parents and our communities in terms of some of the issues that are making them not to give consent for their children to be participating in the case, whether it's at investigation or disciplinary level, because there's nothing that you can do if you're not getting that consent from the parent. But also, what are the implications? If as a parent, I'm allowing my child to be harmed, then how do you bring in the Department of Social Development and the social workers and a whole lot of other issues to be taking care of that? Because it doesn't have jurisdiction over children. It doesn't have learners and also the parents and communities and all that. On the other hand, can you take the case to SAPS for SAPS to be continuing with it? But then obviously you need to be monitoring, because on your side, as says, you tried to close it conditionally to say if we get evidence, we'll be able to reopen and deal with the case going forward. So the point I'm trying to raise is that, yes, we hear what honorable members are saying. We've tried as much as possible to look into different avenues in terms of how can we deal with some of these issues where the reasons are just beyond our control as an institution, but also again through our trilateral SAFE ERC DBE, we are looking into the possibility of sharing evidence. Again, I'm saying it with caution, because then you also need to look into the implications of each institution's legislation, because SAFE is an independent professional regulatory body. What will be the implications for it using evidence that is coming from another organization? And we just had a Section 23 of the SAFE Act case law from the Western Cape High Court, which is also saying, despite the fact that you've gone through the entire disciplinary process, at the end, once you issue a sanction, after issuing a sanction, you still need to go back, check Section 23 of the SAFE Act, you still need to go back to the educator and request for him or her to give the reasons why he or she should not be struck off from the role, despite the fact that you've done it before you issued the sanction. So the processes are tedious from a legislative point of view, and that is why the process of reviewing the SAFE Act and also reviewing processes within the organization is very critical. And we are doing that. We should be having, by the end of the year, a report that will begin to deal with those issues and amend the legislation where necessary, and also look into processes that we can be dealing with holistically to address some of the challenges. Even the issues around institutional arrangements, how do you, again, it's linked to what the question raised by Honorable Ngobo Mapholoba in terms of whether are we getting cooperation or joy from the provincial education department? And I need to extend it to say even employers within the independent schooling with regards to the sanctions when enforcement is supposed to be taking place. It really depends on province to province in terms of the provincial education department. But we are getting cooperation from a number of provinces, from the DBE. We send the letters to both the accused educator in terms of the sanction, but also to the school principal, including the provincial education department. But we also send the entire list to the DBE for them to check if, from personal point of view, those educators have been blocked or not. Often you might find one or two, but I must say the process has been helpful in terms of DBE assisting us to make sure that those sanctions are being effected accordingly. We had one case which I may highlight quickly in terms of one of the provinces where the MEC was not understanding the fact that the states can find an educator guilty, even if the court of law did not find the person guilty, because the burden of proof is different. The other one is using beyond reasonable doubt in terms of the court, is using balance of probability, and therefore the quasi court of power and authority that we have, because the code is flowing from the SAFE Act, and therefore it has certain powers that are there. And also it's a lack of understanding, because then from an MEC side, that office is the one which is supposed to be implementing. However, if they question the SAFE function, you have a problem that you still need to go through a long process to explain and all that. But I think slowly we are getting there, Honorable Ngobo, in terms of that cooperation. Like I said, you've got provinces that are implementing to the teeth religiously, and you've got one or two that we still need to do some bit of work. But normally we are given the platform of HEDCOM, and also of HEDCOM to be able to be taken to the head of department to address some of these challenges. So even when I checked to the issue that was raised by Honorable Siwela in terms of how effective are these investigators, I can say to you they are as effective as the report that we get, because then we would analyze the report and say, on the basis of what we've seen from the entire pack and the processes that have gone, we can be satisfied that the process has been dealt with accordingly. It's rare that our sanctions and our processes are being questioned, because remember, after SAFE, educators can appeal, but if they are not successful, they've got a recourse in terms of going to the High Court. There's only, in the last 10 years, I can safely say, we had about 3 to 4 cases that have gone to the High Court, and one or two that, like the Section 23 that I was talking about, that we did not win the case. So again, perhaps there's a need, Chairperson, for us to really have a session with the Portfolio Committee where we take you through the entire process that we follow and what it means to enforce the Code of Professional Ethics in relation to other institutional arrangements, but also in relation to other legislations that are there within, in and outside education space that we need to be adhering to before some of the things can happen. It's not as easy as we see it. There are a whole lot of complexities that we were talking about. And earlier on, when I was talking about research, there's an issue. I'm trying to link some of the issues instead of just going one by one. Earlier on, when I was talking about the research that is dealing with some of these issues, generally the SAFE research, you'll find it on the SAFE website, and we normally send it to the stakeholders as well. However, the issues that I was referring to and what I'm talking about now in terms of the complexity and what is the personal research that I did, which I can share with yourself in terms of understanding some of the issues that we're talking about in terms of the dynamics and complexities that are surrounding the entire process of enforcing the Code of Professional Ethics. Even the issue of investigation, Honorable Ngobo, that you raised with regard to ensuring that they take place timely, we really note that. Remember, previously, when we were dealing with the annual report, we indicated many of the delays were as a result of not being able to access children because of school disruptions, because of schools being closed, and the COVID pandemic issues. However, now all our cases that we have, we've tried to send them out. We've trained additional panelists who are dealing with investigations and disciplinary hearings to make sure that at least all the cases that we have in our pocket are at investigation level, that have not gone through disciplinary process. and then we'll find a way of how do we speed up the disciplinary process as well. Obviously, we did analysis, and one case takes us about 16,000 plus to complete. And an ordinary investigation, which is doesn't have complexities and to and fro, will take, and I'm taking investigation, not disciplinary hearing, just less than a month. However, if you're talking complicated disciplinary hearing, you're talking about 6 months plus because of the postponement, because of a whole lot of other legal matters and all that, that comes into the picture, the children, the parents, other witnesses and all that. So it can go 6 to 12 months, depending on the nature of the issues that are involved. Going back to Honorable Nodada, you raised an issue around the gap of quality of teachers to be produced and how do the SAFE register inform supply and demand. And I'm going to link that to what Honorable Siwela also raised in terms of more or less the same question, whether are we using our data to inform teacher supply and demand. If you check program two, which is professional register, program six, which is under research, it has got data management. And one of the things that we said we need to do formally and not on an ad hoc basis, because previously we've been doing it on an ad hoc basis, but also working more with the Department of Higher Education and Training and less with DBE. So that program, because now it's that program is in the APT, will be able to produce that particular report, one on the student teachers, but also secondly on the newly qualified educators, so that we can be in a position to understand the profile of those students and whether what we're producing, are we having a gap from teacher supply and demand, and later on you can look into issues of utilization and others. So that particular process is going on. But also remember Section 5 of the B of the SAFE Act demands of us to be advising the minister or ministers, and therefore that data will also come handy in terms of advising both Minister of Higher Education and Training from teacher supply perspective and demand, but also on the side of the DBE the same, but including issues around utilization and all that, because then it affects the new subjects that you are bringing into the picture and a whole lot of other issues. So whether are you having universities that are producing students that will be able to be responsive to what the new curriculum imperatives and subjects are saying. The other one, next one is on, I'm going back to Honorable Ngobo in terms of the data that you asked. The 36,000 plus that you see in the APP presentation is for the financial year 2021-2022 by the end of quarter three. So the total number for active educators throughout the system that are registered with SAFE is 445,000 plus, with some few numbers, but if you round it off, it's 445,000 throughout the country. I've dealt with the turnaround time. Then going back to Honorable Adjuns, the issues of increased cases, especially on sexual misconduct cases and which contributes to gender-based violence to a greater extent. Again, just the same way that I've responded to the first question to Honorable Morasetsa, it's a bigger issue than I think than many of us imagined in the system. And I say it, and I continue to say it every time, that it, yes, we're dealing with advocacy. Yes, every Monday you can log into the SACE portal. We're having webinars to deal with the code of professional ethics, to sensitize educators, to deal with a whole lot of other professional matters. However, you continue to have these issues, and that is why we reported that there's a need to look at the matter differently, and the whole issues that are raised around ethics issues and investigations and disciplinary hearing and advocacy and all that form part of us utilizing the profile of a sexual offender within the teaching profession to understand the profile and understand the conditions within the profession, within the schooling environment, within the classroom that are fertile for educators to be dealing with such kind of issues. So between myself and the research division, we've shared all the cases within the organization that are dealing with sexual misconduct cases, and we have registered progress in terms of going through them and beginning to understand some of the issues that are beyond us sensitizing and just dealing with the webinars and the workshops and all that, so that we can have a comprehensive report that will be able to give us that particular process. We are okay. Now I'm going back to the chairperson. The issues that you raised mostly have to do with finance and also to a certain extent provincial offices, including Honorable Adjons, and the CFO will respond to those, including whether we have a legal mandate as entities to purchase buildings, issues of ownership, and clarifying the budget and all that. The CFO will deal with them. The last one, Chair, was the issue that you raised on the 20,000 was for the current financial year. On the 40,000 educators that we provide professional support on, like I've indicated, it's about participation in the CPTD management system. It's also about the code of professional ethics, as I've already indicated, the professional standards, etc., etc. We advertise openly to all the educators across the country through our social media platforms, but also through the stakeholder platforms, including the provincial education department. That is why we used the numbers that we beginning to receive in the current financial year, including the previous financial year, to determine the numbers that are we are likely to have in the new financial year. So because this current year we were sitting at 24,000 plus in the last week, it will increase by the end of the financial year. We then said, let's double up the number and have more efforts to make sure that the new financial year we can have 40,000. As much as we are advertising, we also look into the needs that are coming from either the CPTD management system or from the cases that we are dealing with, and have the, even with professional development, you can have demand and supply of professional development. So therefore, we are dealing with the demand in terms of the needs that are coming from those programs, but also supply with regards to those ones that we advertise generally within the country with regards to educators being able to participate. And I must say, given the fact that we started last year slowly, this financial year we picked up more than we thought. Hence, I'm saying if we manage to Yes, I understand you've got over 400,000 educators. Again, it goes back to the issue of the culture of self-development within the profession. 20,000, it has been, for us, it has been an achievement because it was a start. And I think the more we continue, the more we'll be able to for other educators to come to the party in terms of making sure that they participate, because this programs are freely available to educators, and the majority of them, they remain after school and utilize data and resources within the school to be able to participate in continuous professional development. And also, as part of making sure that we capacitate our school leaders, female leaders in particular, the program that I've mentioned about whole district development, we have touched base with almost all the districts in KZN where we are piloting, and Limpopo is less. It's more in KZN because that's where the big numbers are. So we've launched and started working with female leaders to make sure that they deal with self-assertiveness, to deal with issues of safety, because we realize that they are being targeted. And many cases that we receive at SAFE is because they've lost authority and power within the schools, but also for them to really make sure that they protect the girl child. Because one of the things that we realized as we were engaging more across the district, crisscrossing the provinces, was the extent at which many principals are scared to report some of these cases because of fear of being dealt with in communities, in families and colleagues and all that. So the issues are broader, they are bigger than what we can even see with the cases that have been reported. And that is why the cases that we're receiving tripled from what we were getting up to now. And they've even gone beyond the allocated budget that we have within council. So yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Let me hand over to the CFO to deal with the remaining issues. CFO.
Thanks, CEO. Let me start with the issue of approval. Which budget are we approving? The total revenue, which, because we have to base our budget on a zero baseline, it's 112,438,000, which has to be approved for the year. It is divided into components different from our partner entity, Umalusi. Ours has got self-funding as well as the grant from the Fiscus. The grant from Fiscus is in respect of the CPTD mandatory function, of which for the current year under consideration is 15.5 million, while the self-funding is 96.9, which add up to 112,438. So that's the amount which has to be approved, Chen. We appreciate the directive. Next time we'll detail it so that it be easy for adjudication by yourselves. The next item, which has got few questions in it, is in respect of the buildings that we purchased in the provinces. Let me indicate that, first of all, the decision of council start by establishing a provincial office. So once it takes a decision to establish a provincial office, in all these provincial offices, we look for accommodation. Where can the services be accommodated? And the same approach which we are getting from the committee, it's that reaffirms the approach of council. The council has been using the same approach to say, can we get a government space? And we have this thing that there are a lot of government buildings which we can use. But the difficulty is difficult to get one to use it. We identify them. We have got experience where we identified buildings, but to get use of those buildings, it's a long process. The process dies between the two departments. But where the department is one, you find it being easier. I'll give an example that we established four provincial offices. Of the four, two we were housed by the Department of Education in their schools. And the other two we had to rent from private individuals or companies. So the very same approach which we are being as an advice, the council has been approaching it and will continue doing that with the